Hey, welcome to the third show. I pulled an audible today. I had another guest scheduled for episode 3. I'm going to redo that with him another time. That's why this one took a little bit longer to get out. I hope that you guys will enjoy this one. I got Sean back with me. We get into some socioeconomic differences and political differences between, you know, Michigan and California. I got some feedback and people wanted to hear a little bit more about things like that. And we touch into sports, of course. So for now, enjoy the show. You know, we haven't talked in a couple weeks and the recruiting rankings got finalized. And, you know, Rivals.com had Michigan 4 and USC 6. And USC was in the Rose Bowl and Michigan's back to being relevant with everything Harbaugh's doing. And, you know, they went through their bad times with Brady Hoke and Rich Rodriguez and then Pete Carroll and the Reggie Bush scandals at USC. It's really cool to me, and I'm sure for you, because you remember when we were watching it in college and in high school, we loved Michigan, but obviously we got into USC because, I mean, Leinart and Carson Palmer and Reggie Bush and Mike Williams and all these great players, and it was just a fun team to watch, and Lendale. And it's cool to have both of them back. And in 07, that year especially, when Michigan played USC in the Rose Bowl, that was when Michigan came off that loss to Ohio State when it was number one and number two. It was the day after Bo died, and everybody said, well, Michigan should get the rematch. And I remember thinking to myself, well, hell yeah, Michigan should get the rematch on a neutral field. Michigan wins that game all damn day.
Yeah, and then Ohio State goes and loses, and then you forget all about that rematch.
Well, yeah, and I think it was funny, too, because you had the sweater vest, Jim Tressel coaching those teams, and Urban Meyer down in Florida, which is the irony, which sickens me to even think about then, that he was fucking with Michigan, and now he's fucking with them again at Ohio State, lobbying to say, no, we're the conference champ, we should be in there, they didn't win their conference championship, they shouldn't be in there. And man, so Michigan has a chance to shut everybody up, go in to Pasadena, you're right in USC's backyard, shut everybody up, beat USC, beat those guys, and then they lay an egg. They couldn't cover anybody. I'm sitting there screaming at the TV at Morgan Trent, watching him just get smoked every pass, every completion. Matt Leinart was doing whatever he wanted.
That's what I, you know, after this last loss to Ohio State, you know, the whole season, you're like, you had a lot of hope. I went back and looked at the last 10 or 15 years even, and it's like, when it's time to come up in a big game, they really haven't. And it's kind of, it was really sad. And it started around that time. And maybe you can even go back to early 2000s. And they came off that kind of, after the national championship in 97, there's a little bit of a layover. And then they got their act together and, you know, had some good teams and won one Big Ten title in there. But there's not a lot of Big Ten titles. There's not a lot. And it really comes down to maybe one or two games that just when they needed to win, which is usually against Ohio State, but some of them you had to win that game and another game. They just didn't get it done, and they haven't got it done in a long time. And yeah, we had it this past season. And I don't want to, you know, bring in all this negativity to this season, but it felt like those seasons where you bang 10 wins and then you fall apart and you lose your bowl game or something. I don't know. I know they weren't up for the bowl game this year. They're totally gutted, you know, so.
Well, that Ohio State game at the end of the year took so much out of them. And the way that they lost, I don't look at the Barrett and did he get a first down? Did he not get a first down? The play before, when the running back is running from all the way from one side of the field, all the way behind the line of scrimmage, getting to the other side of the field and getting them to within 1 yard of the first down, that's when the game got lost.
Yeah.
And that gutted them. But going back to, you know, before the decline, everybody got tired of Lloyd Carr. Oh, he's not innovative. Oh, he's running this bow offense. It needs to be like the SEC. SEC speed. We need that SEC speed. And they ran Lloyd out of town, and they go get Rich Rodriguez from West Virginia. And I hope everybody was happy with what they got, because for 7 years, Michigan was an afterthought. And at the same time, USC, was involved in their troubles and their scandals. I mean, you had it come out that boosters had bought Reggie Bush, his parents, a house. You know, Pete Carroll said, I'm out. This is too hot. I'm out. I'm going to Seattle. What I'm curious about is you were in California when those SC teams started coming to their conclusion, because you moved back when, in 09?
No, so I was out here in 2000 to 2004, and then I moved back to Michigan, and then I moved back to California in 2009. So probably that last good USC team, that one that lost to Texas, I was in Michigan. But all the others, I was out here, and it was, that was like their pro team.
And again, you know, being here where, you know, Michigan wasn't in the national title games, you latch on to a team to say, oh, I want this team to win. And for us, it was USC because it was fun to watch. But we're in Michigan watching these games. Do they even care in L.A.? In L.A., you've got USC and UCLA. Do they care about college sports? Do they care about any sports in general like we do over here?
I really like that ESPN documentary where they did the USC, you know, when they were in their winning years with Reggie Bush and all those guys. And, yeah, it was like a straight up like celebrities would show up to the practices. And, you know, when you're in L.A. and you're winning like that, whether you're a college team, the Clippers, whoever you are, a pro team, that all the celebrities come out, everyone comes. Yeah, they get all, you know, they're wearing the jerseys head to toe. They're just, you know, you'd go there and think, oh, this is the best fan base ever. And then, you know, they have a losing season and all those people disappear. That's different. You know, you go, I go home to Michigan. It doesn't matter if Rich Rod's bombing, you know, people still wore their gear. People still, you know, represent. I mean, come on. Look at Lions fans. They get tattoos every year that the Lions are going to win the Super Bowl, and there's no hope for that. There's like a 1 in a million chance. You'll never see stuff like that.
You walk around, you go to a Lions game, and those tattoos, you'd think that they'd won 8 or 9 Super Bowls in a row because it's Super Bowl 42, 43, 44, 45. And nope, they should just put a big fat X over it. To me, even another thing that was indicative to this shift in attitude towards Michigan football, which they left Nike and they went to Adidas, and you had that disgusting yellow that they were trying to use. I mean, that's not Michigan, damn it. Well, let Nike handle their business.
Thankfully, and all that kind of transpired when I was, you know, graduating. So I graduated in 09, and that was, I think they got Adidas in 7 or 8, something like that.
It was right around the time with Rich Rodriguez. I think Rodriguez played 1 year.
We're leaving. Once Henny and Hart were gone, they got Adidas. Rich Rod came in. I was out of there. I think I was there for like half the year. And then I graduate, and it's like, oh my God, what has happened? So luckily I wasn't around for that.
Yeah. And you were up close and personal because you went to Michigan and you saw the rise and fall, essentially, of two different eras, you know, come and go, and it sucked.
Yeah.
But, you know...
And, you know, people out here ask me, I mean, so I actually run into a lot of older guys, maybe in their 40s, that are, like, diehard Michigan fans. They grew up in California, and it's probably because of the Bo era and the 90s, those big games, and, you know, you got the two Heismans in the 90s, and... Even Lloyd Carr, I mean, they're like, oh, you went to Michigan. Oh, I'm like, oh, okay, are you from there? Or what? And like, no, I just love Michigan. I'm like, that's the weirdest thing ever. So there's, and these guys are like, they're like, they remind me of Midwest type fans.
Well,
they're LA people.
So that's got to be rare out there. I mean, I can't imagine that outside of any alumni clubs that there's people that pays as much attention to college sports or any type of sport where they can set an allegiance to somebody outside of a winning Los Angeles or San Francisco or West Coast team of where they live.
Well, think of San Francisco. We got Stanford and Berkeley. Okay, Stanford was cool in the 80s. You got Berkeley, which is always mediocre.
When you moved back after you had... So you were in the Marines. I mean, everybody that doesn't know, Sean, after high school, went to the Marine Corps, and you were there for 4 years. And three of those years, 2.5 of those years, you're in Southern California, right? And then you
got out. Camp Pendleton. Then I did a year in Japan, and then I came back to California for a couple months, and then back to Michigan.
But you when you got out of the Marines, you went to school at Saddleback in Orange County. At that point, when you were demilitarized, you were able to kind of see the differences between, you know, people from, especially Orange County, you always hear about Orange County. Well, we've got Oakland County that, depending on who you read, Forbes, Wall Street Journal, whoever, is the richest county in America, which I've been to Orange County a couple times. I've been to Oakland County many times. I don't know where they're getting their figures, unless the people in Oakland County are just living more humbly, if it's adjusted for inflation, whatever. But you had to have seen just lifestyle and just different personality differences. And for better, for worse, I enjoyed my time in Orange County. I don't know if I could have lived there. I was more of a San Diego guy. When we went down there, I would pick up. There's only a couple places in this country that I would pick up and go tomorrow. San Diego's one of them. But I don't know if I could do Mission Viejo or Newport or Irvine.
Yeah. So you got from bottom to top. I'll just give you a rundown. So San Diego, yeah, it's the cleanest big city you'll ever be in. Like, beautiful. All the colleges are right on the beach. I mean, that's why, you know, University of Spoiled Daughters, USD or UCSD, great place to go. Then you come up to Orange County, and when I was in college, I worked at a law firm, and I had to drive on the vaunted, four, I think it was the 10 or the 405, getting it mixed up. And that is 8 lanes across, bumper to bumper, takes you an hour to get 15 minutes, and you just lose it by the time you get to work. And yeah, just so crowded and crazy. And then you get to LA, and I kind of, so when I first came out here, when I was 18, 19, LA, I was drawn to. And as I got older, it was, okay, maybe San Diego, and then you get older, Orange County. And then when I finally came back in 09, Southern Cal was just seemed like this fake wasteland of, you know, fake money. It wasn't people who worked, and it wasn't, like, I don't even know, what did they just get? They just make money because their house appreciates. I don't know what they were doing. There's no one, you know, all the kids there in their 20s all lived at home. They, you know, didn't have real jobs or anything. I'm like, but they're driving around in Beamers and stuff. So you come up here and it was like the scenery's different. Silicon Valley is like totally different. NorCal, totally different than Southern Cal. It's like two different states. And, you know, the topography is different. It's more mountainous, more nature-y, hippie. Of course, you have Berkeley and everything. And then you have this feeling like, oh, people who make money here actually work. But now I'm getting even older. Now I'm crossing the 30s threshold, closer to 40s than 30s.
We're almost on the wrong side of 30.
Yeah. I think I've worn out my California. Well, I'm like, you know, California General is not really my gig anymore. So I'm thinking of pulling the ripcord in a couple of years. But that, yeah, that's how it was. And you're 18, 19, L.A. is the coolest place to be. You know, all this, you know,
not impressed.
Hustle and bustle and star.
Not impressed. When did I come out? I came out in 01. I think it was June of 01, my first time. And you took me to L.A. a couple times. One of those times we ended up in Santa Monica, and I was just not impressed. I don't know, maybe because like I wasn't familiar with it, if I was overwhelmed, or just the places we went to. I got more drawn again.
Well, we're not partiers. I mean, the nightlife there in LA is pretty wild. And if you go, if you like going all back then, you know, all these clubs and things like that. And yeah, it's fun and crazy. And there's parties everywhere and people with money. And, but it's really a lot of actresses and actors. I mean, you go to a restaurant, it's all these, like, you're like, geez, that waitress is really hot. And you're like, oh, she moved here from Kentucky to be an actress. And I get it. It's legit true. Like, that's
read my screenplay. Read my screenplay.
No, but like, I remember being in the mall, and then someone came up to Mo, and they're like, "Have you ever modeled before?" or something. I'm like, "What is going on?" And they're like, "It's all this like talent grab or something."
Well, it's an entertainment
club. Really,
weird,
really, I mean, weird place.
And it has to be. I mean, it can't be understated. It's Hollywood. It's an entertainment hub. But to me too, where I saw big differences, where I personally was more of the Orange County type. Now you go back to saying you're going to the clubs and all these exclusive places. I mean, there's a big difference going to a club on Newport Beach, which we went to in 04 because we were old enough and we had a couple more bucks in our pocket, instead of calling the Capital One card and saying, "Yo, increase my limit," and they gladly did because they knew I was going to hit it. Coming over here,
of the Rich Beach. That was before The Hills and all those shows came out. And that's kind of what they were. Like, those shows are pretty true. I mean, that was like Laguna Beach, Orange County, you know, you'd go to these outdoor bars with fire pits, you know, so everyone would be around a fire pit, or that you'd go to the beach, or that was their kind of like bar and sandals, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's nothing outdoor over here because, you know, when we go to the bars and the clubs, when we're underage, we're in Canada, but you can't wear your jacket because who wants to wear their jacket to the bar? So you're sitting in line trying to get in 13, 14 degree weather. And then you finally turn 21 and then you get to go to Royal Oak and you get to go to Ferndale. And, you know, now Detroit's kind of having a renaissance, which I miss that because I wasn't going to Detroit when I was 21. But you'd go to these bars and you'd go to these clubs and bounce around Royal Oak. And it was riffraff. It was just a bunch of hoodlums that you go into these places and you really put yourself on the side of, I don't want to be here. There's nothing for me here.
A lot of people go out and like trying to fight people.
Yep.
So there's like this aggression or something. That's not, yeah. Cali, I mean, even people are like, oh, don't go to Oakland, it's rough, or don't go here. And you go there, especially being from Michigan, and you're like, what is this? You know?
Well, again,
like,
you got to remember, we fight.
The only place that's ever scared me.
No, I was going to say, you remember, we fight because we drink, and we're cold, and we're depressed, because we don't see the sun for 5-6 months at a time. So, yeah, we're going to go to the bar, and we're going to fight, because it's going to keep us warm, and you're hoping that the girl that you're looking at, she's going to keep you warm, too.
I don't know how. She's not wearing anything.
But the best part was, you know, waiting in line, and they didn't give a shit. They were just sitting in line because we had to go to Woody's. We had to go to all these places, and because we're 21 now. But then it's almost like when we were little, we were like, oh, my God, when we get our license, we're going to go rollerblading everywhere. It should have been like, yo, when we're 21, we can just sit at home and play video games and drink beer and not have to worry about getting into a fight.
Yeah, exactly.
But in California, you went there to be seen. Like you said, you were an actor, you were an actress, and you had to go there to be seen. And, you know, were you a model? Were you this? Are you that? It's more of a lifestyle thing again. And I know I keep touching on that. It's just curious to me that how you could adjust to that, or how you could tolerate that. You're ready to, you know, look at a couple years, maybe up and leaving. You're in a weird spot too right now. We're up in Northern California, which is, you know, Silicon Valley, and Silicon Valley is run by the innovative millennials who have changed the world to me for the better. And we missed that boat. We were the ones that downloaded Napster and downloaded the songs, and we're like, oh, we're perfectly content getting this music for free, instead of the ones that were 6-7 years after us that said, I don't want music. I want movies. I want to pay people to use their own car instead of taxi cabs. And we missed that boat because we were content. We were in between that really weird time where you worked, you went to college as an engineer, you went to college as a teacher, you went to college as whatever it was you went, and you did that career. These kids now were like, well, I'm not going to college. And they're listening to Jimmy Eat World, and they're all emo. I'm just going to develop this app, and I'm going to make a ton of, and here we are. And that's where you're at right now, too. So that's what you're seeing.
Well, yeah, I feel all the generations. I feel because we're right on the X-gen, you know, we're kind of like, done with the system, man, Kurt Cobain, blah, blah, blah. And then the millennials, which were kind of on the beginning of as well, they're the, you know, I go to school, I get this degree. Like, we're so heavily pushed for, you know, go to school, get a degree, that's all you need. And now I think the Z-gen, which is the kids born after 2000, they're like, school's a joke, you know, you waste all the, and it's not a joke, but I'm kind of getting their point. It's becoming more expensive than you actually benefit from it.
Well,
and
I mean, there's not
like, well,
a year that
passes. I can make all
passes.
This money on YouTube. I can start a business. I can be, you know, they're becoming these, you know, they realize they want to be innovative in control of their own destiny.
And who can blame them? I mean, really, you know, our parents or even, you know, us can say, no, you've got to follow the path and you've got to do the right process and the right stuff. Who can blame them? If you can go get it now, go get it now. But unfortunately, like I took college and, you know, I took college as an opportunity not only to learn and higher learning and real focus down on what you wanted to go to school for and your major, but to socialize yourself too. These kids are not social, but they don't care. They don't care. And that's maybe why they're so innovative, because they're internalizing so much. They're not distracted by going to Wild Woody's and getting drunk and fighting, or, you know, going to these clubs in Newport in your best clothes and in your new six series or whatever. They don't care. They just want their phones, they want their tablets, and they want their innovation, and then they get their money.
Yeah. Well, you think about it, like when we were getting out of school, especially where we went to school and everything, how it wasn't really this push that it was so important for college until like maybe a few years later.
Sean, where we went to school.
And I think that you just get one of those sweet government jobs,
yeah.
Whether it's, and that could be of anything, you know, like teaching, firefighter, city, you know, very stable, good pay. We got a, you know, the government in general was, you know, that was in the 90s where it was like, you know, a good half and half of Republican, Democrat, everything was, good. We're selling SUVs like crazy in Michigan.
Oh, sure. Gas was 99 cents, $1.10, $1. Yeah, let's bring out these Hummers. Hey, General Motors. Hey, Ford. Let's bring out Hummers and Expeditions and Suburbans and, you know, all these different big-ass cars. And not think about, one, the ramifications on your wallet, and two, the ramifications on the economy, and your ability to adapt and stay fluid if something were to change, which, surprise, it changed.
Well, I think that's the big reason if I would have went to school with you guys coming out of high school, I would have a totally different degree, because it was a different mindset. And yeah. Then when I actually went to school, which is like 4 or 5 years later after the Marines, that's, you know, why I became an engineer. Because by that time, it was like a major push for like, you know, science and get a PhD and all this stuff. And I was like so obsessed. And that was kind of the culture. And then when I was getting out of school, and you got, you know, President Obama coming in, everything's cool. This is awesome. Well, the economy took a crap. And in 2008-09, and then you're just like, I've been sold a lie. What the heck? And I lived through that like a younger millennial, even though I'm not a younger millennial. Getting out of school in 09, you know.
You were right there with them.
After I went to high school, I was living like I was 23, even though I was 27. So I experienced that, and I think that's a lot of those people are, they either went hard right or hard left, and hard left meaning, system let me down, we need more government, blah, 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 blah. Or they go right, and then they become maybe, the Gen Z kids lived through that too when they were younger. They were like, all this college, like, that doesn't guarantee you anything, blah, 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 you know? So you'll still see all the people who are really hard on college still are a bit older in their 20s, where the younger 20s, and you could probably speak, you work around more of them than I do. They're probably more into, like, this hack the system kind of thing, like, man, college is crap, man.
Well, I don't see any of them. None of them are going to school for, you know, your traditional degrees. And, you know, you had a lot of people going into accounting or pharmaceuticals or medical. Or, you know, you had some kids going to law school and teaching. And a lot of them now, it's the new wave. It's, you know, they're not stupid. They know where it's at. It's graphic design. It's technology. It's information technology. You know, they are in healthcare because they realize the old people that are old, we're going to get old,
yeah.
They're going to get old. So, yeah, healthcare is always going to be there. You mentioned government jobs, police officers, firefighters.
Healthcare is close. Healthcare is close to being a government job because, you know, you have so many subsidies and, it's kind of half there where it's something that's needed. It's not going to be like, oh, now that the market's bad, we're going to, you know, like if you work for Porsche and the market's bad, then, you know, let's cut back on the sports cars. No, you're always going to need health care. People, you know, they're going to get older and sicker and all that stuff.
Right.
Live longer. So, yeah, that's the one that's like government-ish that was a good investment if you were around, you know, our age. But that wasn't the big one being pushed back then. It was, I remember, yeah, it was teacher was like number one. Wasn't Eastern known as like the teaching
Eastern
school?
Eastern was the education. Corey's an educator, and he's one of our best friends, and he took advantage of that, and he's making something of himself. But that's not the case anymore. It's not the case anymore.
Well, yeah, you're very, I guess not dependent, but yeah, things could swing one way and totally, you know, and I don't even want to begin to talk about it because I have no clue. he would be the best one. But yeah, it's not that it's risky. I mean, going out in the private sector, like I'm in the private sector, I guess, and that's risky too, because, you know, you companies get come and go and all that stuff. But yeah, it's just it's interesting to look back or just and then kind of see what the kids, the Zs, are doing now and kind of get their take on their older millennial brothers and sisters or even parents maybe. What they think of all this.
Well, I don't think they care. I mean, they have such a cavalier attitude.
10 to 18 right now?
Yeah, those are the, 10to 18, 10 to 17, you know, the ones born after 2000. They have such a cavalier attitude now. You see multiple people of that generation saying, you left us this world crappier than you got it. So they'll look at our generation, maybe, you know, the generation before us, because, I don't have kids that old. I mean, some people in our generation do, but they said flat out, you had one job. You were supposed to leave us this world better like your parents did, and you screwed it all up. We played the hand we were dealt. Yeah, we weren't as innovative as them, but we took up those traditional career paths and those traditional routes that laid the groundwork for those independent thinkers. Let's give them credit. They're independent thinkers, and they were innovative. Don't blame us. Don't blame us for multiple bad decisions made at a high government level that trickled down and affected everybody.
Well, it's just knowing, like, what are the consequences of, just like smart cars. It's like, you know, you want to push for these, and then you have all these cars driving, then you're going to put 3-4 million people out of work or the next day because they're driving stuff around, and you're like, oh crap, now what do we do with these people? And, you know, so they can go think we're the best generation because we work for, you know, Facebook, and we think up all this crazy stuff. And,
yeah, but I just read something, too, that these people...
We're millionaires, but then it's, okay, there's still people that need to farm and do things. And
I just read something the other day that people that are working for Facebook that live... near the campus, they can't afford to eat, they can't afford to pay their electricity, but, you know, oh, they're working for Facebook, and I'm a coder, and I'm a designer, and I'm a, so really the pay discrepancy out there mirrors the pay discrepancy that you see in your traditional Ford setting or your traditional U.S. Steel setting in the Midwest, and, your bosses get paid. And your unions, if you don't negotiate a proper contract, new guys coming in aren't going to be getting what the old guys already have. And it looks like that's starting to impact the reality of, you know, true economics is starting to impact these darling companies, these darling tech companies. And now their workers are asking Zuckerberg for help. That's not a good look on Zuckerberg, especially if he's kind of, sort of entertaining political aspirations, as some people might have you believe. It's not a good look if your company's asking you, your company's most important people are asking you for help.
Well, I'll tell you what these people do. They come out of college, and if it's Google, Facebook, Apple, that's where you want to work no matter what. You're coming out of college. You at least get on your resume. You're always going to accept the job, and they're going to pay you probably more than anyone in the country, like guaranteed. I guarantee it. So they come here, and then you realize a one-bedroom apartment is $5,000 a month or something, and you got to share it with three other people that work at Google. And you're like, well, it's Google. I'm going to do it.
Yep.
And then you work your way up. You might do this for a couple of years. Get your stock options, you load up. You know, they're very generous companies, they are. But you pretty much cannot live like a normal human being. So you got to put up with this for a few years. Then you take that salary, either stay with the company, move somewhere else, or maybe you were lucky and you moved out here in 2012, 13, and you bought a house, and now it's worth twice as much because the market just completely bubbled, and you're like, I need to get out now. So you take all that money that you just sold your house and your stock options and everything, and you go somewhere like Denver or Atlanta, and then you go drive up the house prices there.
Yep.
You're taking up because all these places hate these Californians, and a lot of them aren't native Californians. Like all these Californians, they're like, oh, they're moving to Austin and they're making it all liberal and they're driving the prices up. And a lot of these people are, you know, most of the people here are, like I said, there are transplants because the gentrification has moved everyone out. After the first bubble burst. And now it's, and you know, they're still going to get those, and they know, Apple knows who they are. I interview with these people. I had that mindset too. When you're an engineer, you want to work for those companies just because they, you know, it's all flash and everyone's like, oh, they must be, you know, thinking up crazy stuff. And it's Apple, it's Google. It's not as happy and fun as, well, it wasn't as happy and fun the few days that I were there. And that goes for the, you know, I spoke with Tesla, Apple, not Google, but I got enough people I know at Google to, you know, it's good, but it's not sustainable. People don't sustain lives out here. And if they do, they're really, yeah, that's your mid to high management. I mean, they got multi-million net worth, and they could be 25. So,
and they could be 25. Well,
you know, Facebook went public years ago, and you're talking a couple, I think it was, maybe, you know, I like how, don't quote me on numbers, a couple hundred people turning into millionaires overnight. What do you think that does? And all those people live in that little area down there. What do you think that does? Uh-oh. All the dealerships are like, whoa, cars are flying off the lots. Houses are just, the house prices are going up because now these people have, it's not that the houses are worth that much. It's just now you got a bunch of millionaires competing for a little corner house.
So the demand.
They're gonna outbid each other.
The demand goes up and that money gets pumped back into the economy. So a capital, you know, in our capitalistic format that we have, of course the real estate, and of course the real estate markets, and of course these, you know, again, the car dealerships and more of these consumer goods are going to say, you know what, why don't we charge a little bit of a premium? Why don't we capitalize on this new money that has been discovered out here? It was like a new gold rush, and funny that it happened in this almost the same area as the old gold rush. And with this new tech and this new money, it created a groundswell of people, like you said, going to California, bankrupting several cities. What happens to these municipalities? What happens to all these high-end restaurants and clubs and bars and all these vacant land that is on the market for so much money? What happens after everybody leaves, after the bubble bursts again?
Well, I moved out here after the bubble, and I remember leaving Michigan, and it was depressing. I graduated in 2009. No one got a job. Kind of like, what are we going to do? A lot of our internships got pulled the year before. So you leave Michigan, it's just like, oh, we're just not hiring. We're just hiring. You know, you think you get, you know, you got a pretty good resume. You got military, mechanical engineer, all that. No. So I come out here, and you wouldn't believe, it's like, it's 2009, and people are running around like, spending money like you wouldn't believe. It's like, maybe that's what gets them through the bubbles, because it was like, oh, we don't even care. Just buy, 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 bigger, you know, they're moving not only like business as usual, but like at a pace I've never seen before. And this was 2009. I'm like, oh my, what is going on? And then, you know, being here now, now it's just a feverish, especially like a year or two. It's slowing down right now. I think a lot of these unicorns and a lot of these companies have just got so much capital shoved into them and inflated the value and being like, oh, look, this is a billion-dollar company. And then you find out, like, the blood testing company that went under, it was like a billion-dollar company, and it's like, oh, their stuff is kind of crappy, and then they canceled their order, and then they went totally bankrupt.
Yep. Well, all it takes is so if you build your company.
These aren't companies like GM and, you know, these aren't big companies that have been around for 100 years. They're like, they've been here 2 years, and it's like, Uber, it's never going to fail. It's perfect. And, you know, like, it takes one or two, and then the cards come down, and then the house prices go down. Then the investors pull out of all those houses, because we got a lot of foreign investors over here buying up a lot of these properties, driving them up even more. And what do you see? Once something ticks, all the cards come down.
Where I live now in Macomb County, when the housing bubble burst, it hit hard. You drive up and down Hall Road, which is the major street where I'm at. The restaurants were never empty, but it was that one release, that they could go eat and just get away from everything, and they could go have a Red Robin burger, or they could go to Don Pablo's and get an enchilada or something, and It was their release.
Doesn't every government that's in power always look for a, they look for like a catastrophe or something, either a war or an economic event or something, and then, or terrorist attack, and then you can be like, okay, now it's crisis time. We have to do this, or if we don't bail these people out, we're going down. You know, the country's going down. Because in the bad thing is no one wants bad stuff while they're in, you know, whether they're in office or they're running a company or anything. And sometimes you got to let things reset. You got to let, and that's why and you might not experience it in Michigan, but a lot of these cities, go look at all the major cities in the country, their home values are way too high. These companies in Silicon Valley are valued too high. The stock market is insane. That is not normal. Well, no way did we, how do we go to 20,000 when the GDP is not even going? I mean, we're not making anything more.
Right,
people's wages
new.
Aren't going up. Where is all this money coming from? It's fake because it's greed. And when greed is introduced, when you have a greed head going after momentum, which is what's happening, you're just riding the momentum, and then everyone thinks, "Oh, I'm going to hit it at the peak, and I'm going to pull out as soon as this thing crashes." But right now I'm getting paid, and I'm keep flipping houses. I'm going to keep dumping my money in the stock market because it keeps going up every week. And they think they're going to have time to pull out. But if everyone could do that, everyone would be rich.
You're right. But that's why it's all numbers on paper. It's all numbers on paper. When I talk to different people, when I talk to different advisors, when I talk to different people in the financial sector, what they tell me all the time is cash is king, and cash has been king forever. If you're sitting on cash, you're insulated from any of the ups and downs. But what's happening is when greed drives, they don't want to sit on cash.
Look at the leverage everyone has. When everyone has 0% interest, 2%, 3%, you can leverage a huge amount of money. $1,000 back in the 80s got you a $75,000 home. Now it gets you a $350,000 home, because in the 80s it was 16% interest, and you were in a rush to pay that sucker off. Now, who cares? Stretch it out 30 years, sit on that, you know, 3%. I can afford a huge house. I can afford more house. Well, that makes the house more expensive. It's fake. Is that really what it's worth? Well, it's worth that because I'll pay it, or that's what the market's worth. If you're gonna, if you just hold it, all these things we kept being told, it's kind of nice to actually live through that as an adult in 6, 7, 8, 9, and see that happen and be like, wow, this is coming back around. I'm surprised no one's really thinking about any of this and holding their cash and not, you know, because everyone's so greedy to leverage it all out and take all these loans.
Well, we all think that it's all blue skies again. It can't possibly happen again, can it? Yes, absolutely it can. Well, I mean, the signs now are just as obvious, if not more, than they were before.
And why do we have this? Why do we have the rich getting richer, the poor getting poorer? Because whether it's up or down, the rich always get rich. They're getting rich now because they're in the stock market, and they're flipping houses for the last couple of years, and they're making all this money. And then they're smart. A lot of them have pulled out. A lot of stuff's slowing down right now. But you don't notice it because the smart people are out. The dumb people still keep throwing money in there, the ones that probably shouldn't be in the stock market and can't afford it. Then it's going to blow up. They're going to hold all the rich people are going to hold all their cash. Wait a couple of years, houses are going to hit the bottom again. They're going to come scoop them all up just like they did in 2011. Most of these houses out here are owned by investors, people from China, like all these, you know, they knew, oh, this is a low in the market, and it's going to go back up, and now look at all the money they made, and they're making money off their rent. Some of them aren't even renting them out. They're just buying them and letting them sit vacant. And then they know that drives the price up, because then that's one less rental for a family that needs a rental and a house. So the demand goes up. So why put them on the market and rent them? That's hassle I got to deal with. I'm just going to hold the thing. I'm making, you know, 15% a year, but it's slowing down. Now it's like 2-3%, you know, they're going to start pulling out. So yeah, I'm with you. Cash is king. I'm holding my cash. I'm planning my exit.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it's all about now. And, you know, I'm not in a position to sit here and flip and invest in this and that. So yeah, I'm going to listen to these guys that are telling me, just hang on to your cash. you know, don't mess with your 401k right now by switching up your allocations. Just hang on to cash right now. And whether or not this $20,000, $21,000 is just an aberration and it's going to correct itself again, which it's going to, who's there to realize it? Are people in Michigan insulated from that? Do they remember the awful, awful times that we had? I mean, Michigan got hit hard. I would argue, you know, people are going to tell me Arizona, people are going to tell me Nevada. I don't care. Michigan got hit the hardest. You were out in Cal. You know, you got to California at the tail end of it when maybe it started to get to the uptick, but you guys got hit, but no way as hard as we did here.
Yeah, like Silicon Valley got hit, but not the people who are running it. Those, because again, the rich always stay rich. They took a little. It's like you're a billionaire and you take a $100 million hit. You're like, oh, that sucks. That's a bad year. But they're still driving. They're like, well, got to keep pumping. They know to make money, they need to keep pumping and charging, and that's what they're doing. It doesn't even matter. They don't listen. It's just like pump more in, greed, 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 until you go under. And that's really, you know, they get rich that way. So why change? Why would they change? But, you know, us trying to aspire to middle class or the middle class folks, we gotta don't follow their game.
No, I mean, it's not for everybody, and you've got to maintain yours. I mean, you've got to hang on to what you have, and if it's the white picket fence and the 2.5 kids and the whatever, you know, to me, I've got a great house, and you know, when I built it in 2011 to now, which is 6 years later, and I see like, wow, it's really gone up. You don't think it crosses my mind to say, put the sign up, let's go. Take all this equity. Let's go. But no, because let me sit on that equity.
But you're a homeowner, and you're going to most likely stay, even though it's going, you know, there's ups and downs. That's why out here we have such a boom and bust, because as soon as it ticks down, a lot of these houses are owned by people who aren't homeowners, mm-hmm. and it's an investment to them. So, yeah, they're going to throw up the sign, because that's all it is. It's just money to them.
Yeah, they don't have a
you're
connection
like, well,
to it.
I like my house. I mean, I didn't buy it so I could get top dollar and then go rent and then wait and then buy another. Yeah, you know, like I don't want to go through this every couple of years. I mean, you got these people at Google living out of like box trucks. They like rent a box truck. Google lets you park for free in the parking lot. And then they live in the darn thing or the Winnebago or something like that. And they're saving like $5,000 a month because they're not renting a 2-bedroom apartment. And I'm not even kidding. They're $5,000 for a 2-bedroom apartment.
And well, they're getting a 2-bedroom apartment.
Yeah, that's when you look at those prices, you're like, well, that's not realistic when you think of the earth. Like, property doesn't cost that much. Land doesn't, I don't care. It's like, and these people are like, well, there's only so much land. There's something. Yeah, I get it within those areas. But a lot of it is, well, where do you think we live? This is California. They don't let you trim a tree without getting you got to go to San Francisco. You got to go to the city and wait 2 years to trim the tree in front of your house.
Well, I mean, the DEQ,
they just
probably
don't let you build. And they do it on purpose. They claim that it's, you know, for the environment and all this stuff. But guess what? It drives home values up. And who does that benefit?
The city.
The homeowners, which love it, and the property taxes. Because when from when I moved here till now, I think home values have gone up 50, 70%, something like that. So that's 70% more revenue for the counties and the state. I mean, or I don't know if it goes to the state, but yeah. So they're all for it.
Is there?
They're all for regulations.
Do you guys have a state income tax?
Yeah, it's like 8, 9, something like that.
Okay. So with all that money in California, where does all this money go? Why can't they support it?
I think there's a lot of it's a tight entitlements. Maybe it's immigrants. I don't know. I mean, you can come in. You I don't know. Yeah, that's a good question. Because they go around and we boast. You know, these people here. This is the seventh largest economy in the world. We're and that's countries or something. But what does that mean? You know,
numbers on paper.
Yeah.
And
you'll come here and you'll see the biggest disparity between rich or poor ever. I mean, you'll have the richest people driving the most expensive cars you've ever seen. And then across the street, you got people that, you know, that are all on welfare, that none of them have any money. You know, a lot of them are, you know, immigrants that are just trying to work and do their thing. And I think California likes it because, especially Hollywood, all these rich folks, they love all this, you know, all their maids, all the farming, all the farmers love it. And then this whole drought thing, which is completely hilarious because it's been raining, you know, for weeks on end. I heard these farmers get water for like, they measure it by the acre. It's like 10 cents an acre or something. I'm like, what? So they get, you know, because it's a grandfathered thing where they get the, so that's where all the water is going. So when they're like, oh, we're in a drought, it's because we're, you know, all these farmers get this crazy cheap water and we're just pumping the stuff in. But then we turn on the citizens and be like, you need to do your part. Don't do this and don't do that. And people just get all brainwashed like it's a zombie. I mean, I'm at work. And this isn't now, of course, because it's raining. This is a couple of years ago when we all had drought phobia. And I'm like brushing my teeth or something, and some guy's yelling at me from in the stall like, hey, we're in a drought. What are you doing? And I'm like, are you kidding me? Is this happening? So you know, I ran the faucet a little too long, and it's like they just go around like telling that's what the government does. It gets of California anyway. They get everyone all hyped up and crazy for their agenda, and then you find out they're selling water 10 cents an acre to these farmers.
Listen, California produce and California agriculture drives a big, big portion of that economy. I'm not going to fault the government for giving entitlements to the farmers, but at the same time, why aren't you allowed to brush your teeth or water your lawn? Or, right. Again, I can't speak to it because
come and fine you. This is the state of telling you what to do. It really is. I mean, you think all of them telling you what to do, they would have their shit together and we would all fall in line. And yeah, why are they back to your first question, what is the hell is wrong in California? I don't know. But then you look at all these major cities and they all have the same problem. They all want to be run the way they want to be run, and they want the government out of their business, but then they're for big government. So it's kind of weird. If I'm ready to leave this place, I can imagine. If I live in SoCal, I've been gone years ago. I'm just kidding.
And that's what I
pick, but, you know,
that's what I pick up from you when you talk about the differences between Northern and Southern California. The people do seem to be more grounded. They do seem to be a little more reality-based, and that does get expressed through sport. The Warriors have always had a good fan base. The Raiders, to me, outside of Philadelphia, probably has the best fan base. Thick and thin, the black hole is always full, which to me, you take the Raiders out of Oakland and move them to Las Vegas or move them to L.A., that would be so stupid. Leave Oakland alone.
Yeah.
Even the A's, the Moneyball Oakland Athletics, who every 6-7 years they're gonna win a division and get to the playoffs, but then they're gonna have to cut payroll because they can't compete. The fans are passionate in Northern California. The Dodgers were down for so long and people abandoned. This is LA, which one of the most famous clips is when Gibson hit that home run in 88. It goes over the wall, and you see all the brake lights on the freeway of the fans that had already left. They hammer on their brakes because they want to turn around, or they can't believe that they left. And you don't see that in Michigan. It's quite the opposite in Michigan. And I know I poke fun at the Lions all the time, but I've been to so many Lions games. And 2 years ago, I went to the Bengal game where I told everybody, the 20 dudes I was with, you guys, they're going to turn it over. Cincinnati's going to come down, and they're going to kick the field goal and win. Oh, you're a hater. You're just, no, I've read this book 1,000 times before. I've seen this movie 1,000 times before.
But you know what?
Every week.
When have they ever proved you wrong?
They haven't. Every week, there's 67,000 people at the game. There's 100, 200,000 people downtown tailgating and celebrating because they're passionate about the team, if they're garbage or not. And I respect Lion fan for doing that, because stick with your guns. Stick with your team. Every year, the Lions are going to win the Super Bowl, like our guy that has the tattoos all up on his arm, right? And even though this is hockey town, people love this. This is a football town. You can call it hockey town, and between the Wings and the Pistons, they're carrying the banner for all the championships. They would trade every Piston championship and half of the hockey championships for one Super Bowl appearance.
You think so?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're telling me that you don't go to Red Wing fan and say, hey, we'll give you 97, you give me 98, and you give me 02, and I'll give you a Lions Super Bowl, they would trade it in a heartbeat.
I think you could, yeah, you could take, I think they would trade that Pistons beating the Lakers. They'll trade that one.
I wouldn't.
Two of the wings winning. No, they can't trade the Bad Boys. You can't trade that one.
Yeah, but that game, that you trade, the 04 series.
You trade one of the Bad Boys?
No, I would trade the Portland one. I would keep the two over L.A., over the Showtime Lakers, and then over the super team, the original super team Lakers. I mean, was that not the biggest contrast? And, you know, to me, what we've talked about a little bit during this is the difference between California, Los Angeles, and Michigan. You had the super team, Kobe, Shaq, Gary Payton, Karl Malone. And it was funny because not only were they the biggest superstars in the league, they couldn't get along. So they were cannibalizing themselves, much like California's doing with the rations to the people and the 10-cent entitlements to the farmers, against this blue collar, hardworking, our superstar is an undersized center with an oversized afro and a journeyman guard who has already played for four teams. They beat them, and around here they call it the 5-game sweep. Because they lost game two on a fluke Kobe three-pointer to send it to overtime. To me, those two wins, when they swept Magic and the Lakers in 89 and in 04 when it was the 5-game sweep, I wouldn't trade those. No way would I trade those.
Okay, well, you just said you're going to trade all the championships for a Lions.
I won't.
I was trying to cherry pick a couple of
you. Okay. If I had to trade a Piston one, it would be the 91 against Portland. I would trade Red Wing ones,
yeah. But you got to trade one of those, and then a couple, maybe two Red Wings. You got it. I mean, this is a Super Bowl.
I wasn't around for the ones in the 50s and the 40s. Trade those Red Wing championships. I don't want those. Who right now in Laguna, or Newport, or Mission Viejo is talking about trading Laker championships or Dodger championships for UCLA? Nobody is. They don't care about sports.
No. They don't care about UCLA.
They care about their cars. They care about their jobs. They care about their image.
Well, I'll say in SoCal, from 3,000 miles away. I don't think any of them have jobs. No one has a job in SoCal. I just don't get where the money comes from. Like, what companies are there? What are they doing? I don't know what they're doing. Here, you at least have a clue. It's like, okay, there's some, you know, we got some of the biggest tech companies in the world. We even have some manufacturing in the East Bay. In Oakland, and then you know, we got the three major airport. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on here. I don't know what SoCal has other than Hollywood, some rising home values, or something. I don't know what do they do. I don't know.
I don't know.
That was a rant.
I do know that they're always ahead of the trends, and the coasts always tend to be. So when I came out there and we went to San Diego and he brought me to that big outdoor mall, I mean, I'd never seen anything like that. And then eventually you start seeing outdoor malls in Michigan, and the detractors were like, it's Michigan, it's cold, who the hell's going to go to? Everybody goes to Partridge Creek no matter what time.
Yeah.
They love it. They love Partridge Creek. It's outdoor mall. There's a Starbucks. They sell Uggs. That's the Shelby Township uniform. They're in the oversized glasses. So, yeah, they love it. And that was there. You brought me to a Whole Foods. I'd never seen a Whole Foods before. Now over here, it's all about Whole Foods and Trader Joe's and these gourmet markets that are over here.
Well, dude, when I moved back in 04, there was hardly any Starbucks. And I, you know, by then I was addicted, and I was like, where's the Starbucks? Like, Tim Hortons? I'm like, what?
Tim Hortons, eh? It's right across the river, eh?
And I think they probably pick up quicker now. I mean, back then it was, I would hear things on the radio, and then, a year later or 2 years later, they'd be, you know, at Michigan, and be like, oh, that was old. But I don't think that's the case anymore.
Car that I would love to see more, and you don't see him here because Michigan's got their law, I love Tesla. It was the funniest thing. I learned more about Tesla from Seth Rollins. You don't know who he is. He's a wrestler. He was on another show, and he was talking about how he bought a Tesla and how it works. I got so interested in that car where I was like, damn it, if they made an SUV, I'd be all over that. I would love to see Tesla do good.
I like how they push the envelope, and they push the other car companies around, and they kind of, and even the way they sell them, they're like, no, we don't need these dealers and all this crap. We're going to go just order it online. Why do you need a dealer? Just pick it out like you go to Amazon.
Explain to me why that's such a big deal. Explain to me why Michigan can't get over that, why they have such a hard-on for Tesla that they won't let them do that. Why is that such a big deal to have a dealer?
It's something with they have to go through the dealer, and then the dealer has a, you know, they sell a certain amount of cars, so then they would cut out the dealer, and they basically, you could undercut the price because then it, you don't get this whole invoice. You know, you go in there, they're like, well, we're selling you this below invoice. You don't know. You know, it's all BS. And they just, you know, and then you get you in there and they try to get you all that extra crap and right. They want to get that. And I mean, these dealers are doing well. I mean, you go to these dealerships and there's these big old glass buildings and, you know, it's like, yeah, that costs money. So, you know, they're making money on all this stuff and they're getting kickbacks from the car companies to push all their stuff up. But what if you're a car company and you could just have customers order your car like they're ordering a pizza? Just pick what you want and we'll ship to your house. Okay. Right. It's something with someone getting cut out and not getting money. And that's what Michigan's upset about. Something that's going to hurt the dealers or something. It's going to hurt someone. They got to go through a dealer or something. I don't know.
If you've got a demographic that wants a Tesla or a car like that, that they want to deal in a different manner, you're going to get money somehow from this deal. I mean, there is always a sales tax. Take advantage of it. But
right. Well,
don't leave your people disgruntled.
They don't want. Yeah. It's the same thing with being coercive to people back in the day where it was like, you can't park your foreign car on my lot. You know, like they're trying to force Tesla out of there so you don't. People in Michigan can't even buy Teslas. You know, it's like, even though it's an American car company, so you know, it's American, but it's not, you know, because it's always buy American. Well, it's like, well, yeah, they're American, but they're not Michigan. That's just not, you know, it's not really free market. They're not really, they're not saying, come on in, Tesla. We dare you. We're going to make better shit than you.
Right. Why
that's
wouldn't you take
you know,
that?
That's what you should do.
That should be the competitive, you know, Detroit wants to be known as low down, gritty and dirty, you know, right? We're going to roll our sleeves up. Hey, take the challenge. Take the challenge and come up with something like that. There's not one drop of fluid in those cars. And it's amazing.
Yeah, maybe wiper fluid.
Yeah. Wiper fluid.
Just like a new iPhone. It's like, dude, okay, it's the same regurgitated garbage. What are you going to do? We're going to take the headphone jack off, or we're going to do this. Like, come on, man, come up with something new, or just lower the price, or do, you know, like, don't say it's like, this is the greatest thing in the world. The new Toyota RX, the same model we've come out with the last 10 years, you get 10 more horsepower. And now with USB plug, I'm like, oh, welcome to 2005, you idiot.
You're coming home sometime in 2017. And the three of us are going to have to get together.
Yep. Me, you, Corey, we're going to do a super podcast.
You're
going to be live and crazy.
Because I know you said you wanted to respond to a couple of things Corey and I talked about, specifically me knocking your tooth out.
Oh, yeah. I had to add in, you know, my little bits, and I'm sure we'll have more stories. We get together. I don't know how, what it is. Me, you, and Corey get together, and he turns into, like, this vault where he has a photographic memory of our childhood. So you just kind of pull pieces. You're like, wow, so that's going to be fun.
But is it of the whole childhood or is it of the moments where he's on top of the hill?
Well, the ones were there, yeah.
Sean, listen, thanks for coming on. I know we threw this together. We batted around a couple things. But thanks for coming on again. We will talk to you again soon. And everybody, thanks for listening.
Okay, see you later. Thanks, guys.
I want to thank Sean again for coming on and really talking about some interesting stuff. Some of the more curious stuff that I heard was the people living in their Winnebagos and box trucks in front of Google. And I want to thank him, too, for allowing me to be more accepting of the millennials and accepting of me knowing that I'm part of that generation too. So thanks for that. It was a real eye-opening and soul-opening moment. And also, since the last show came out, this is now available on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher for download. You guys can subscribe there. When you guys subscribe or download, just make sure you leave some good comments and good reviews. That'll help. And until the next one comes out, thanks for listening, and we'll see you then.